Hey there, what's going on? Welcome to the Bipolar Bear Podcast with your host, yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. Every time I say that, I laugh. Maybe one day I'll get to a point where I don't giggle at my own stupid introduction. Anyway, it's been a few days here, folks, huh? So I think I'm going to change the cadence here. I mentioned I might do that, but I think I'm going to do that because I've seen the listenership kind of dwindle. So I don't know that really having an episode 5 consecutive days in a row or even 5 days a week is really necessary for all of the banter and the nonsense that I'm putting out there on the good old podcast world. But so I'll probably, I don't know, maybe I'll do a couple a week. We'll see how it goes. I'm not sure at this point, but I'm sure you don't really care, right? You just will potentially listen to a new episode when it comes out. So today I wanted to talk about teamwork. So, you know, I've started a new position recently. And I'm a director in this position as well. So, you know, titles are what they are. I'm a very, I consider myself a very transparent person. And that can be positive and it can be negative. It's positive in the right environment when you're around people that are also transparent and appreciate transparency. But it's not really optimal if you're around people that need a thumb on their neck all the time because they're a bunch of boneheads and don't do their work. So, not knowing what kind of an environment I'm in currently, I'm going to have to, do some failing fast kind of methodology approaches here and just see what works in this environment. I don't know what's going to work, what's not going to work. You know, I'm definitely being more reserved and more calm about everything. But at the same time, it's a little difficult for me to be like that. As you know, I'm not a super soft-spoken kind of person. I'm pretty, I wouldn't say I'm obnoxious. I just, you know, I like to talk and I like to say what I think needs to be said and I like to work on the issues. So I guess that does leave me open for people to take advantage of that. But if they choose to do that, then I guess I'll hold them accountable to it and we'll take it from there. But this is such a small little group of people. It shouldn't really be there are challenges to both large and small organizations, and methodologies or approaches to management and leadership come with their own unique sets of I guess, diversity or disparity. It's just different, right? If you have a lot of people you're trying to manage, it's a different approach than if you have a small number of people. And you can get very lackadaisical with, there's a nice word of the day, lackadaisical. You can get, very lackadaisical about a lot of things because in small environments, they don't really matter. Like, here's a great example. Like, so if you're not overburdened with tickets and projects and work to do, you might get assigned work that's not necessarily in your scope, but you're going to get it anyway because you just can do it and you're not so overwhelmed that you can't. And it's probably the right thing to do for the client. So in that regard, I can absolutely see, you know, the point of contention being, I don't want to do this. It's not part of my job, but you know, you're not busy and you're one of our best people. So this is a great representation for the organization, for the company at large. So just go do it. Don't worry about it. So we're kind of up against the wall in a couple circumstances like that, where people don't want to do things that theoretically aren't part of their job description, but they're part of their job role in the grander scheme of how we satisfy and provide white glove service to a client. You know, so there's definitely a dynamic there, and it's something that I'll have to work with people on. But I'm not someone that's going to look at every ticket and every single thing that you submit and follow that, because that's ridiculous. If you're not doing your job, I'm not going to be the one to watch every single thing you do to make, I mean, I'm not your parent, right? I mean, I don't approach it that way. So if you're not doing your job, I will eventually find that out and we will have a discussion about those types of things, but I'm not going to sit there and hold your feet to the fire every step of the way and watch over your shoulder about everything you're doing. You're going to either succeed or fail, and that's going to be 100% on you, not on me. I'm there to hold you accountable and set the expectation. And I think that's a very important thing to say out loud, is that you have to set people up for success by at least providing them with the expectation. So I had a meeting last week, one-on-one with everybody, just to let everyone know, the people that report to me, what my expectations are of them, what I expect them to do each and every day. And as I learn more about the position in the company and the clients and all that stuff, you know, things will be dynamic and will be changing based on my, you know, my increased experience and understanding of what we're doing as an organization. So, in a sense, I'm setting people up for success because I'm telling you what I want and what I expect you to do. So if you choose not to do that, then that's your choice. But the result of that, or the repercussion for that, will be accountability. And the same, it could be a positive or a negative accountability, right? It could be that I recognize you for doing a great job and going above and beyond and kicking butt and doing your job each and every day, and that's awesome. Or it could be that you're just not pulling your weight, you're causing trouble, you're difficult to work with, and we'll have to have recurring conversations about that, up to and including things like, you know, a performance improvement plan and ultimately a final written notice. And then, you know, if we have to part ways, then that's what we have to do. Now, I'm not one for that at all. And I'm brand new. I've worked 7 days at this place so far. So I can't, by any stretch of the imagination, formulate an opinion about people yet. I would guarantee that I need a few months to really get into the swing of things and get a feel for the people and what's going on. This is not going to happen overnight or in the first week. That's ridiculous. I could pass initial judgments that could be accurate, but they could also be wildly inaccurate. And that's not fair. That's not really putting out a good expectation. If some new guy comes in and goes, "Oh yeah, I don't like you. You're not doing your job because so-and-so said so. Now you're done." I got to see this on my own. So unfortunately, we'll have to grin and bear it through a period of time here where we evaluate everybody and see what we're really able to get done, see what we're up against, see what kind of people we really have here, because I am not the doer in this role. I am the commander in chief in that regard, and that I'm here to lead by example and lead through mentorships and training and expectations and support, but I'm not going to do the work for you. That's something you have to do. That's your role. And truthfully, I look at everything as we all have a job to do. What our titles are irrelevant. We're just here working. We're one team, right? We're working together to get things done. So I'm available to people whenever they need it, and I hope that they're available whenever I need it. It may not go both ways. I take the position that someone on the leadership team should likely have more commitment to the organization than someone not. Simply because you could look at some strategic or some very pointed scenarios like, I don't know the salaries across the board here, but it's highly likely that I'm being paid a lot more money than other people there, right? That's just the position that I'm in. So that would come with a greater feeling of responsibility and commitment to the organization, just part of how it works. I've also been a salaried employee for, I don't know, going on close to 20 years. So to me, that's always meant you just work until the job is done. That's just the environments that I've been in have always been like that. So I don't just roll out of here at 5 and that's the end of it. If somebody calls me, I'm going to pick the phone up. I have no issue dealing with things after hours, over the weekend, on holidays. It doesn't make any difference to me. But I don't know that I'm going to hold that same expectation for people unless you're an on-call where you're assigned that responsibility. If that's the case, then I expect you to do the work. Or why would we be paying you? I think it's not so cut and dry is what I'm getting at. You know, I mean, you gotta be aware of these things and think about this stuff when you're really working with teams of people. You gotta identify the ones you can go to, who you can go to, how much you can get from them, when it's too much, when it's not enough, you know, when they're feeling down. Like I had a circumstance on Friday actually where someone had reached a kind of a point where they couldn't take anymore. And we just sat in my office and, you know, kind of, I listened and supported the whole circumstance and let them know that I had their back and it was all good and we'll get through this and don't worry about it and it's going to be fine and I'm here for you and all those kinds of supportive things, because, you know, you can't really have a constructive conversation when someone's in that state of mind. It's just, you know, they got to vent and get it out. And when they calm down, then we can go back and revisit what happened and kind of figure it out. But I think it's important to, you know, be there for people for real. And this is something that I have to prove. I'm the new person in this in this environment, in this organization. And I'm going to be saying a lot of things that are probably very different from what they've heard in the past, which is what my experience was at my last position, was that coming from Silicon Valley, you know, is a wonderful thing. And that is really a blessing. If you ever have a chance, and, you know, I'll say this straight up front, I would go and work for one of the companies in Silicon Valley, literally at the snap of a finger, because it's such a well-aligned methodology and approach for me. Like, I really, really like how they do business out there and how they conduct themselves and how they work and what the expectations are and how they set the bar high and you have to strive for excellence. But it's all done in a nice, pleasant, passive way. People aren't yelling at you and making you feel belittled and foolish and stupid, but they're supporting you, but they're holding you accountable. You know, it's a really positive thing. It's very dynamic. Things changed every day in those environments. And it was never like, oh, we're doing something else today. It was like, oh, okay, we're doing this today. Or, oh, wow, this is cool. I've been meaning to look at this. This is great. We're going to do it now. Cool. Everyone had that kind of an attitude toward things rather than the negative kind of, oh, I don't want to change. I know how to do it this way. This is dumb. It's stupid. We don't need to. You know, all those negative connotations that kind of go along with someone that doesn't like change. I don't know that I'd say I like change in everything, but in technology, I do. You know, I mean, it's a struggle, right? If you're using new tools or new software or new methodologies or whatever, yeah, you got to learn how to do it. Like, I'm learning a tool right now called ConnectWise. It's a ticketing system, and I've never used it, oddly, in my entire career. I've never come across this particular tool for ticketing. So I don't know how to use it, you know, and there's a pretty steep learning curve with this because this tool does a lot. So it's a positive and negative, right? So it's a big lift up front to get up to speed quickly. But at the same time, this tool houses an enormous amount of potential and possibilities in terms of streamlining and optimizing and automating our processes so that we can do things better. And I already see several opportunities where we're definitely not using this tool for all that we are paying for and what it can do. And we're doing some really ridiculous processes on the outside that make no sense at all when we should just be keeping everything inside this tool. So, you know, things like that, I guess we'll get to. I'm not pushing those things too hard yet. I mean, I literally just started. I don't want to come in and just like shit all over everything that people have done and say, hey, you're not using this tool right. How have you been using it for years and you don't know how to do it? You know, I think that kind of rubs people the wrong way, and there's got to be a better way to say it. And I'm absolutely working on continually every day, you know, trying to be more approachable for real, not just in my own opinion. Because again, you got to remember, you take things from your own perspective, right? So if you're interpreting the way that you're treating someone and you expect the treatment of yourself to be the way that you're putting out the treatment of others, it may not actually align yet, right? So because of what I just said about how I've been on the West Coast and working for companies out there, and I'm very used to that kind of aggressive, everybody contributes. If you don't contribute, that's actually seen as failure rather than, it's not that you're not doing your job, it's that you're not committing above and beyond your job. That's the expectation. Right. So they expect you to know DevOps and coding and, you know, infrastructure tooling and automation and pipelines and all that kind of stuff is your job. But to exceed the expectation is to go above and beyond and contribute and, you know, communicate in meetings and contribute and ideas and all kinds of things like that, that really set you apart. And the coolest thing about the companies, at least that I worked for on the West Coast, was that everybody was like that. It wasn't like you had to force people to contribute. Everyone wanted to contribute. And it, in some cases, even got to the point where people would get into debates and, you know, dare I say, even arguments over the fact that they were so passionate and strong-willed about their particular idea and methodology and approach to solving the problem that the two people would just go at it for a period of time debating who was right. So, you know, therein lies, there could be a problem to that extent too, even in that world where it's so dominated by aggressive, strong personalities and, you know, real eagerness to contribute and be the one that solves the problem, that you can create these disastrous scenarios as well. On the other end of the spectrum, it's arguably worse than if you have people that don't contribute at all. So I'm hoping that we reach some kind of balance where we have people that want to contribute and the people that don't kind of start to see the people that are contributing, and that kind of helps them feel more comfortable contributing. And, you know, you got to take into account everybody's personality is different. Everyone's, you know, emotional intelligence is different. Everyone's age is different. And that means a lot of things. Like, one of my supervisors is 20 years younger than I am. So of course, from a life experience perspective, you know, they could be a brilliant person that has nothing to do with it. But if you don't have life experience, it's going to be difficult to apply your brilliance because you just don't have the experience to understand how to do something. It's not that you don't understand it or you don't know it. It's that emotions get in the way, or your immaturity, or your just lack of experience in life gets in the way of you solving the problem correctly because you just don't know how to deal with the circumstance. And it's not that you can't learn it, and it's not that you're not intelligent. And I would argue that the majority of the people are more intelligent than I am. They're just, you know, not 50 years old. I've been doing this stuff for a long time. I've been around a lot of people or a lot of scenarios, a lot of really bad people, you know, I mean, and I've seen a lot of what works and what doesn't work. So it really aids me in the ability to help solve a problem in what probably seems like a very easy way. But what you got to remember is that, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, or people that have this type of acumen have been doing this stuff for a long period of time. That's why it rolls right off your tongue. If you're brand new to this, you're going to flub it and you're going to struggle through it and you're not going to do the right thing most of the time. That's absolutely normal. So I tell people, you have to get comfortable with failing, because you fail more in life than you succeed. It's important to celebrate the success and the win and things like that, because they're few and far between. But you most importantly have to get comfortable with the fact that you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed. And even I'm not there, right? How many times in these episodes have I bitched about, how long do I have to keep working on this podcast, or how long do I have to keep doing and pushing music before any of that stuff actually does anything meaningful? Why is it not success? You know, it's, I don't have the answer to that. It's just a, you know, it's a time thing. It's just an opportunity. It's one of those things that you don't have control over, but it's difficult to kind of be in control of, because it makes me very passionately angry, right? The fact that I put out music no less than once a month, and none of the songs for the last year plus have been picked up by any editorials, you know, really kind of irks me. There's another word of the day from way back in the 80s. That was a big word. Anyway, that's a conundrum word of the day, the real word of the day, conundrum. That's a real difficult one for me, because, you know, you're really passionate about this stuff. And it's like, well, I guess you could, like I've said countless times, you could attribute it to the fact that, what I'm releasing from a musical perspective is not good. And, you know, whomever's listening to it just doesn't like it. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles, man. But it's kind of hard to understand why you would go through a period of time where you were very successful, and then all of a sudden continuing to release music. It's not like I stopped on my end. I stopped putting music out. I'm continually doing it. And then all of a sudden it just never gets put on. Weird. It's a very strange thing. So things like that, I have no control over. I don't know, but I'm still working myself on trying to be positive and overcoming those things. And I've been at this for a long time. So the point being, or the takeaway, is that these things aren't really that easy, and they're not something that happen overnight. You know, they feel like they do when you finally reach that point where you take the next step. It's like the light bulb goes off, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, this is how you do that. Yeah, but it took you potentially years to get to that point. So it might be like an overnight success or an overnight achievement, but it took, you know, an aggregate of 5, 10, 15 years maybe to reach that next level. And arguably some people are going to move quicker than others through this process, but I guess it depends a lot on the type of person you are, how open-minded and comfortable you are with failure, and, you know, how innately intelligent you end up really being, because truly the only people that can get through this stuff any faster are those that can get past the emotional triggers that come along with all of this crap. Like, if somebody mistreats you at work, you can't melt down about that, right? That's not the right response. It's an acceptable response and it's a reality, right? But it's not a response that's going to take you to the next level, because you're going to spend your time being melted down and having, you know, that whole scenario to deal with. And that's going to be very difficult for anyone. I go through those myself. And like I said, I'm, you know, almost 50 years old, and those things happen to me in my personal life, literally on a daily basis between my wife and I. We have such dynamics where one minute everything will be fine. The next minute we want to like literally take each other's lives and never want to see each other again and wonder and question everything we've been doing for the last 20 years. So I have a long way to go with that too, because there's too much personal involved in it. So I guess that the difference in, you know, in a business environment is it's great to be passionate and care and give a shit about what you're doing and what your company's doing and your role in that organization. But you have to understand that there is a stopping point at some point in there where you just can't give a shit anymore and you have to let go, because if you don't let go, you end up in these holes of despair, in these pits of despair, melting down over things that are kind of trivial. You know, if you're an outsider looking in going, why would that have upset you that way? That's ridiculous. But if you take it personally, yes, I can see why it would upset you that way. You're taking it personally. It's a personal thing to you that maybe somebody's calling you out or saying you're wrong or arguing with you or whatever the case may be. Not everybody is awesome at dealing with that stuff, and they take it very personally as a personal attack on their character, and then it becomes an emotional response, not an intellectual response or a learned response. You know, you're just reacting from your emotions, and that oftentimes, not that that's a bad thing, but it oftentimes is an extreme, right? If you're super excited about something, that makes you potentially run around and jump and flail about, things you wouldn't do if you weren't feeling that, right? And I'm not in any way saying you shouldn't feel that way about things. I don't think that's true at all. I think you should feel how you should feel. I think you just have to understand how to control and, you know, kind of master those feelings and not let them be the master of you, right? It's wonderful to feel good about something, celebrate a win, but, you know, you got to kind of compartmentalize all these things, because everything that you do is scrutinized in an environment where you're leading people. If you're whimsical and fun-loving and you know, that's, of course, you as a person, that's, you know, how you're going to be seen. And that's how everybody else is going to end up acting, because they're going to follow your example. So it's important, I think, to have ongoing discussions with people, keep things in perspective, be transparent, be honest, set clear and concise expectations with no qualms. You know, don't do things like, well, you know, it's the company that's making me do it this. No, own your convictions, man. If you want something a certain way and this is how you operate, just say it. Don't pussyfoot around it. Don't try to soften the blow. Just say it. And if people have a problem with it, you deal with it. It's just that simple. But of course, it's never that simple. You know, and I'm in a scenario now where the simplicity of it is complicated by the fact that, you know, I'm trying to form my own opinion of people. I'm getting opinions that are formed about people from other people. So it's kind of like a toxic, it's not that it's all negative. Like some people are being described as, oh, they're great. They're heroes. They're superstars, all that stuff. I don't know what they are. I've not even spoken to them yet. So it's difficult for me to know and form an opinion of that. I haven't had any opportunity to interact with them yet. And then I'm hearing of other people that are not, and I've had chances to interact with them. And I'm like, I don't know. I think I have a different opinion of what I've heard here so far. So I have a long way to go, is I guess what I'm saying. And at the same time, I'm still dealing with my own demons of the fact that I don't like going to an office. I really already miss working from home. That's a real luxury, people. If you're working from home, I don't know. I mean, it's nice to get out. Like, I feel good hanging around people, but being in an office for 8 hours is just too many hours to me. It's just too much time. You know, I think we're productive and it's nice to see people, but I still spend the majority of my time in an office. So it's, you know, it's not like we're storyboarding or, you know, whiteboarding or brainstorming or water coolering or whatever you want to call it. That isn't really going on in any way that requires me to be in the office. And as well, this company has as part of its company in a different state. So we're going to always have remote people. So to that end, it's kind of, I'm trying to see my way through that, because it's a burden for me, right? It's really affecting my judgment of, yeah, I really like this, but I'm not at home and it's, you know, I mean, I'm losing a lot of time. Like, this is a perfect example. I haven't been able to get in any time to do this podcast for 7 days or whenever the last one was. Yeah, it was like last Saturday or last Sunday, something like that. You know, and I got to find time to play my instruments and do the things that I want to do that are valuable to my time, all because I'm taking a job that pays a lot of money and has a high demand on my time. So I'm not sure what I'm wondering, but I feel like I want a lesser responsibility kind of position where I'm working from home and I go back to having the ability to do what I want to do. But at the same time, coming out of what I just had that was that, something about that wasn't resonating with me either. So I guess, the last company was the wrong company. And like I said in a few episodes previous, you know, it was expressed to me that those people have been lying sacks of shit for the entirety of their existence is the way it was explained. So it's not like I made the wrong decision. It's just that I think that I'm better cut out to be a work from home type person. And it's still not gone away where, you know, and I love driving my car and I have a hybrid. So I have a Toyota RAV4 Prime, I love this. I mean, I'm not a car guy at all. Like, I don't care about, like, I like cars. Like, I don't mean it that way. I just mean, like, I'm not a guy that's going to go spend $800, $900 a month on a car payment because, ooh, that's such a cool car. I've never been like that. It's never been, it's just transportation. And yeah, the luxury of having a new car is wonderful, but you know, I'm not having some luxury car. I'm not driving a Mercedes or a BMW or something fancy that's expensive. I'm driving a Toyota or a Chevy or something like that, just a regular car. But I don't dismiss that or demean that because driving a brand new car is a privilege that not everyone has the ability to do. So, you know, I think that's a great thing, but I actually like this car. And my point being, I've already driven it over 1,000 miles and I've only used half a tank of gas. So these hybrid cars, if you're looking for a car out there, I would highly suggest you take a look at the hybrids, if not a fully electric car, because unless you're like traveling crazy distances, I love the electric. Oh my God, I'm going to get, you know, I would absolutely entertain getting a fully electric car next. I love the electric piece. I hate it when the car turns on with the motor or the regular engine. I mean, it runs fine and it's quiet and it's nothing wrong with it. But I mean, the battery power side of it is completely silent. It's got like this instant on power. It's just, I don't know. It's just way better. It's silent. There's no sound at all. And you'd be surprised how loud your car actually is that you're just not aware of it when you're in a car and driving. And, you know, the music is just more clear. It's just, there's just less friggin' noise. You know, it's amazing. So I love this car. I'm super happy I got it. I think I got a great deal on it and I'm super psyched to be driving it. So I feel very fortunate to have that. But yeah, I would definitely encourage anyone that's looking at a vehicle to at least go take a drive in a hybrid. You know, I plug my car in every day and I basically use the engine for the last 5 miles of my drive each day. So my point is, yeah, I'm spending roughly an hour and a half or a little bit more in commute each day there and back, but I'm really only using a fraction of a gallon of gas. So the beauty of that is that, you know, gas prices are very high right now. So for me, at least my point is I don't have the argument that, well, you know, Garrett, you know, you're spending all this money on gas, you're losing. I'm actually not. I've spent $0. I've put no gas in this car since I've had it. And it's still just above a half a tank. And I've gone over 1,000 miles. So now I don't know what it's costing me to plug it in every day. What I do know, though, is that the car doesn't just sit there and charge indefinitely. Once it's fully charged, the charger turns off. So you're not paying for idle time. You're paying for the green light that's on the charging station that says it's plugged in, but not the red and orange lights that are on while it's actively charging. So I don't really know. I haven't noticed. I don't pay attention to that kind of a bill. I mean, maybe it went up like $4. I don't know, but it's nothing that I was like, holy shit, the bill went up. I haven't noticed it at all. Like when we had a hot tub or when we run our pool all summer, you notice that the thing's running for, you know, 12 hours a day. The hot tub cycles every 4 hours it runs. It's running on a 220 line. There's significant difference in power on something like that, you know? So it was like between $30 and $40 a month to run a hot tub, which, I mean, again, I don't give a shit anyway, because that's, you know, especially with gas prices now, $40 a month, even if that's what it cost me to charge this car all month, that's nothing. I mean, it's probably going to cost me over $50 to fill the thing up with gas once, right? So if I'm running purely on gas, I'm going to be filling that thing up once a week. So I'm looking at like $200 a month easily in fuel expense. And right now I have zero because I plug it in. Or even if it's $40, I mean, that's a far cry from 200. So anyway, I don't know why I'm talking about hybrid cars, but I really love my car. The RAV4 Prime. It's cool. It doesn't have leather, which is fine. I don't like leather because of the weather out here is not conducive. Like in the winter, it's super cold. In the summer, it burns the fucking hair off your legs. It's ridiculous. I mean, the seats are heated. So in the wintertime, I can warm my butt up if I'm cold. But yeah, I mean, I'm fine with cloth as an interior. I did look at the, which was it? The GMC, the new Blazer that they put out. Wow, that's a pretty sharp vehicle too. I looked at, it was kind of like a sporty model. So it had like this really nice black leather with red trimmed accents. So like the holes in the leather behind it was red. I mean, it was really, really a sharp looking car, but it was this big beast of a V6 and it was loud and it was actually a lot more expensive to lease it than it was the Prime that I ended up getting. So sorry, Chevy or GM or whoever that is, you guys lose. But it's a beautiful car. There's no question about it. It's got nice lines on it. It drove real nice. It felt big and strong, but like I said, I don't give a shit. Now that I'm driving so much, it actually matters to me how many miles per gallon I'm going to be able to get. Now that said, I'm going to probably go over my lease mileage allowance. So I'll have to deal with that. But again, that's in 3 years. I'll have to deal with that. If it costs me $1,000, then that's what it costs me, but there's nothing I can do about that. But again, I'm arguing the point and I'm trying to kind of wean in the, you know, even I'm a kind of a pussy too. Cause on one hand I sit here and say, yeah, I don't care, fire me. But on the other hand, I'm like, I don't really want that to happen. Of course. I mean, I'm just being an idiot. So I haven't really had a discussion with the owner and said, look, you know, this is a pretty hefty drive. And I was going to do it after a few weeks and just let him know that, you know, I wanted to give this a chance to settle in, but you know, we're going to have to work something out where there's going to be a few days a month. I'm going to work from home because this drive is murder. It's just too much to do every day. And it's just, I need something to break up my week. So maybe like Tuesdays or Thursdays or one of those days every week or every other week or, you know, something like that. Or I'm just going to work remote. Now, again, I don't know if they even give a shit. I mean, you know, I got, it's, you know, I'm so early on in this process, you know, I'm concluding and kind of concocting things in my head that I have to be more open about and sit down and talk. But I also don't want to, the focus of what I'm talking about to the owner of the company to be like when I'm going to be on in the office and when I'm not. I feel like that sends a kind of a shitty message. But the fact of the matter is the other member of our leadership team is in a different state. So that guy is literally never there. So, you know, we could argue we already have kind of a remote environment anyway. So it's just a matter of the fact that maybe I won't come in every week, every day. You know, we'll see how that goes. But I'm not going to push that button just yet because, like I said, I've been there. This past week was my first full week. So I've been there 9 days total. So, you know, let's make the first conversations. Let's make it through the first month before I start bringing stuff like that up. That's at least my own goal is I'm trying to get to a, like, let's get to the first month and then we'll go, okay, where are we at? What's working? What isn't working? What do I need to change? You know, things like that. I don't want to be seen as a pain in the ass or a mistake either. So I want to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to be successful. That being said, you know, I'm not unhappy at all. I think these are nice people. I'm so far so good. I mean, I've had good conversations with everyone I've spoken to. Everyone's real nice. And I guess I could say that about the last position. It probably didn't start to fall apart until about 6 months. So I guess I'll have to give this at least 6 months to see where we really are going to go and how things are really going to pan out. But until we reach that point, I'm just kind of on autopilot and doing my thing. It's just, I have such a hang up with a waste of time. Like, for example, like I said, that's why I was looking at getting that MV88 mic for my phone. Not that these, look, this podcast is, I'm sure, very unimportant to everybody, right? I like to do it. I think it's cool. I think it's fun. I enjoy listening to what I say. It helps me. I've said this countless times. But at the same time, I'm losing the opportunity to do this as much and at the frequency that I want to. So that's why I was looking at that mic. I could stick it on the end of my phone. And on my ride in or my ride out, I could do that. So maybe I just need to do that just to shut myself up and give it a try. Because then all I'd have to do is come downstairs, take the audio that's in there, import it into my DAW, and then apply the same effects chain that I'm using now on this mic, and hopefully get as good or pretty close to the same quality result that I'm getting from the MV7B that I use right now. Because I don't have the time to do it. And quite frankly, when I get home, I'm sure like all of you that work regular jobs like I do at this point, when you get home, I'm just friggin' tired, man. Most of the time I was doing these podcasts on my lunchtime. Because for me, I get pretty tired after lunch. And I don't usually take a lunch. So I just mean that period. So right, like afternoon, I start to wind down in terms of my ambition and I'm just tired. So if I don't get stuff done at the beginning part of the day, I'm probably not getting it done. So right now it's like 1 o'clock here in my time. So, you know, and I did a bunch of stuff, closed the pool, you know, we went out to a farm to get some donuts and ciders and stuff like that. But if I waited to do this till like 7 o'clock at night, chances are I'm not going to do it because I'm tired. And now I got to get up because I got to go to work tomorrow. You know, it's not just get up, roll out of bed and come downstairs and log onto the computer. It's drive into the office. You know, so I actually have to look presentable, physically be somewhere. Just a pain in the ass. I mean, that's really all it is. So I just have to get used to it, I guess, is all there is to it. With that, I'm going to go watch the Buffalo Bills. Hopefully they'll have a better week this weekend rather than last weekend where they kind of didn't have the showing that we always hope for. But we'll see what they do. Anyway, thanks for, as always, for listening. And you guys have a good week, and I'll talk to you when I talk to you. Thanks.